Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So do you have any sponsees?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you been going to meetings? You've been doing online or?
I did the Zoom thing when the whole pandemic kind of kicked off.
Yeah.
I recently started going back to my home group because things were kind of cooling down. And, you know, I had some close friends that were celebrating some pretty big time. Yeah. So, you know, I went back to my home group two or three times. And, you know, the whole COVID numbers started going up.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I have family that's, you know, immunocompromised, so I'm trying to like limit my exposure.
Yeah.
So I kind of chilled out on the meetings again, you know, I'll start doing some online meetings again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get the same magic with online meetings?
I'll be honest with you, no.
No.
At first, there was a really good men's meeting that I was doing online, and I don't know what happened. You know, it just kind of got kind of lackluster. I was just kind of hearing the same thing over and over again. That's probably more me than them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I started going to some different online meetings and, I don't know. I think, I was just kind of craving more that in-person interaction.
Yeah. I think that there's a weird dynamic with the online meetings that because people are zooming in from their home, that they're a little safer.
Right.
And so what I've noticed is people are, seems to be their sharing's a little more open and transparent, at least in the ones that I've been in.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, that seems like a pretty fair statement, you know. I don't know. I definitely enjoyed it. You know, it was cool. And I know a lot of the good ones are still going on. I know one, you know, there were people chiming in from like New York, California.
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy how, and it started as just a local group of people and it stretched out, you know, all across the country. So that was pretty cool to see, you know, and be a part of.
We had one night we had Georgia, Philadelphia, Canada, Texas, and Hawaii.
Nice.
That was pretty cool, dude.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah. We were tripping out and we were all kind of talking. That was dope. Were you on that one, Andrew? No.
I don't think I was, no.
No. Why not?
I might have actually been going to like online meetings. I mean, in-person meetings.
Oh. So, what's sobriety like?
I mean, for me, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't something that's new to me. This isn't my first go around. My brother-in-law was sober for a long time. And I went to my first meeting when I was probably like 17.
Mm-hmm.
It was an AA meeting. He took me to his home group. I think at that young, I wasn't like, oh, no, that's not me. I'm not that bad yet. I just think I wasn't trying to hear anything they were trying to say. It was an old clubhouse in the basement of a government building, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was a smoking meeting, if that tells you anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the room was lined with old chairs out of an airplane. So it had the ashtrays and the arms of the chairs. And you couldn't see people talking because it was just a big cloud of cigarette smoke. It was pretty intense, but it was just kind of like off and on from there.
Is this the longest string of time you put together?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I think I tried one time real serious in 2008.
Yeah.
And, I stuck around for a little while. Made some really close friends that I'm still in contact with today who are still sober today. But I feel like this time has been, you know, a completely different experience.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think is different about?
Probably the fact that I definitely found a higher power of my understanding. You know, before I see that in, you know, in the text, you know.
Yeah.
And I never really tried to grasp that concept.
Yeah.
So I think this time around, you know, being beaten down so bad and beating myself down so bad that, you know, you hear people say all the time, you know, I was willing to try anything. You know, I really was willing to try anything. And I was like, you know, I've kind of shut the door on this for so long. It's time to, you know, not do that anymore. You know, I want to see, you know, what that looks like for me.
Yeah. That's a really interesting step. We're doing we did this series of, we had this guy, Troy, came in and he brought a bunch of old timers in. I don't know if they were old timers because they had the amount of time they had or just because they were old, but they were very wise. And so they broke down each step. So then we put it together. Andrew actually did it. He put together, we're doing like a video, 10-minute video for each one. Right.
Right.
And so the first step one video was very like landed very. And then step two, I was like, man, this doesn't land as well.
Right.
And I wonder if it's just not that anybody wasn't communicating well. It's just that that step is, it's like, you don't get it until you get it. Right. Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's how it was for me anyways. You know, I was, very against, I was raised in a conservative household religiously.
Yeah.
And my dad was super into, teaching and stuff like that as far as the Bible goes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know what happened with that, but he decided to go a totally different direction.
Oh.
And, for me, I think that my personal experience with that kind of turned me off of just the word God. Like when I would hear the word God, you know, I immediately go to how I was raised.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, you know, pretty much the story for everybody, I feel like.
Yeah.
I would just look at it and say, you know, this,
it's
not what
it's interesting because it's like something shifts for me personally, like my own, like, it's more like the position of surrendering to the higher power and less the concept of the higher power. I've always had a concept of the higher power. And then, but something shifted in me like 7 years into sobriety, you know, where it was like all of a sudden, and even now today, it's still unfolding for me. It's this, you know, that there's a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity. Like I have little say in the matter in which, you know, other than there's a pathway ahead of me, right? The steps, but I have little say in how this entity or whatever it is goes about doing that. You know what I mean? Like it's so much of, I guess, you know, not to be down on religion, but some of the things about religion, like kind of like gives all these lanes of like how or how not God is or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that it's almost like a position that we get to. It's more so that than it is the higher power even.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think the 12 and 12 says like, you'll find like the hoop is bigger than to jump through than you think.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it's like, you know, it was this was the hoop and that's it. And to be, I guess, broken down enough, kind of like what you said, you were at a place where you finally were like, okay, something has to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that, you know, the hoop analogy.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I was thinking just like you said, it was going to be this big, but thankfully it wasn't, you know, for a long time, you know, I had a sponsee that struggled and, you know, with the whole higher power concept. And for a long time, I know for me, I'd used meetings and the fellowship as my higher power until I could get to a point to where I could accept that, you know, a power greater than myself and really develop an understanding of what that really meant, you know? I know for me, that kind of opened up a door to like all kinds of possibilities of, you know, what that means for me.
Yeah.
Just want to check, make sure.
Sorry. I've been in enough of these situations where like we think we're rolling and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to check. I'm not going to, and then I don't check and it's like not rolling.
Not rolling.
I'm like, yeah, I see you. I see you. It's not in against you. It's more my own brain. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a power greater than myself.
Yeah.
So you think that's the kind of the main thing that shifted was this willingness, I guess, really, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that they say willingness is the key? Right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So how much time did you get before, like?
I mean, at the most... I mean, not including prison time. So, let's say I'd probably say a year at the most. I did the, you know, the 30, 60, 90 shuffle for years.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I decided it was, I was just ready, but I think I had a lot of the right pieces in my life to help me stay in that world. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Like people like do that. Like for instance, like I'm working with someone right now who's kind of been doing that, you know, and they kind of, they get some time, they get uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. Consequences of their actions makes them uncomfortable. So then they get committed and then they get comfortable and then the commitment stops. And so then that willingness goes away.
Yeah.
The willingness to do anything, like whatever you tell me to do, you know? And what do you think that is? Like, you know, I know a lot of people, like loved ones, people who aren't addicts, and they watch us, you know, go in and out and start and stop and struggle. Like, what do you think is that thing, like, for you, like that willingness, that key that you got? What do you think that was for you?
Definitely in the beginning, it was, you know, like the book says, the gift of desperation. I was so desperate to stop that cycle.
Yeah.
And I did not know how. I didn't even think it was going to be possible. And there towards the very end of at least this last run, you know, I'd gotten to a point to where I was completely comfortable with living homeless in a tent on, you know, in the woods in Atlanta until I died. You know, I'd become completely comfortable with that.
Wow.
And, you know, that kept me going for a long time. But I think, you know, after you work the steps and, you know, for me, you know, as spirituality started to develop for me, I don't know. It's kind of hard to put words to describe it. I feel like, you know, it's just not, it just wasn't an option. Yeah. But not everybody sees it that way. You know, willingness can be difficult, you know, even now for me, you know, sometimes, and not every day, I really have the willingness to do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
You know, I get, you know, complacent, like you said, complacency is dangerous. Yeah, you know, I know it wasn't when all the years passed when I was trying to get sober all those years.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the bad times that took me back out. It was when I would start getting some complacency and normalcy would start coming back. And, you know, and it was, I don't think it was ever like a singular event that I was like, oh man, I gotta go get high right now.
Right.
I just would wake up one morning and say, I'm gonna go get high today.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really need a reason.
Right.
So, it just continued like that.
Yeah.
But I think I don't know, you know, I just look at where I'm at today and I'm just not willing to take any steps backwards.
Right.
You know, I think for me, that's how I keep a lot of my willingness. Prayer and meditation helps exponentially with keeping willingness for me.
Yeah. It's really weird how prayer works because I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
I have no freaking clue.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, like the practice of getting on my knees and praying is significantly different than sitting up in my bed or laying in my bed and praying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when I get into that position and like I go through, you know, whatever my sponsor has me going through, like the 7-step prayer, the 3rd-step prayer, you know, and I go through whatever those prayers are, even if I'm not feeling it, you know, even if they're kind of routine, I'll get up from that and it's like doing for me what I can't do for myself. Absolutely. Something else is taking over. It's a trip, man.
It really is.
Yeah. You know,
I was not a fan of prayer when I came in.
Yeah.
You know, and my sponsor, you know, when I was going through the 3rd step, part of the 3rd step for me was to rewrite the 3rd step prayer in my own words.
Oh, good.
And
yeah.
I actually, you know, I come from, I guess, both of the major fellowships. You know, I did a lot of time trying to get clean in NA.
Oh, yeah.
And I did a lot of things in AA.
Yeah.
But the NA 3rd step prayer was super simple. Mm. It just, you know, take my will in my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. So, you know, for me, that was so simple for me. And I could see myself saying that every day. And, you know, I think that, you know, starting that for a starting point was great.
Yeah. And you don't have to really believe it totally.
No, just absolutely not. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the trip about it, man. You know, it is a gift. The gift of desperation is a gift. I mean, it really is, like, it's a grace in a sense.
Absolutely.
What's the name? King's Kaleidoscope. King's Kaleidoscope has this song, and A Fortunate Fall. That's what the name of the song is. And it's the fortunate fall. It's like because of that, you know? And that, I think, like, true spirituality is more of a pathway of descent than it is ascent, right? And I think people think of spirituality as this ascension, lifting up, you know, 2 feet off the ground and just kind of moving through life. And it's actually, at least for me, that's kind of what I've learned in these last couple of years, is like, it's actually really rooted and grounded in reality more than I think it is.
Yeah.
And that's helped me a lot. One of the topics you had about practicing spiritual principles.
Yeah.
We're kind of talking about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the spiritual awakening was something else.
Yeah.
When did you, this time, when do you think you had that? Because that's different than coming to an understanding of surrendering your will.
Yeah.
Right? A spiritual awakening is something that's different. How would you contrast those two?
I feel like for me, you know, the spiritual awakening was more or less me realizing that I have the capacity to be spiritual. I didn't think I had the capacity. I mean, I'm just going to be honest here.
Please.
You know, I had eaten enough LSD that I'm pretty sure I've met God a couple times. And I was like, you know, I had this concept of what God is.
Yeah.
And then I delved down a really dark hole. And I think that concept disappeared for me. And I didn't think there was any possible way of me being spiritual.
Yeah.
Or having any kind of concept or being capable to believe in God.
Yeah.
But I think once I realized that I absolutely can, and I do, that I think that was when I really had my spiritual awakening. I think that's when I really, you know, realized, you know, what was going on.
Yeah.
Couldn't say when that happened. You know, I tell my sponsees all the time that for me, it probably happened somewhere after the 12th step.
Yeah.
But it probably happened much earlier than that. I just wasn't paying any attention to what really was going on. It took a lot of reflection to really figure that out.
So, take me back to, you were living in a tent in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You're comfortable with that, which a lot of people are comfortable with that.
Yeah.
A lot of people, not to say every homeless person is in that scenario, but some people are in that situation because they prefer that life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
There's all the bullshit isn't on them.
Yeah.
All the requirements of society isn't on them. Right. But what puts you in a tent, in a van down by the river? Yeah. You know what I mean?
In a van down by the river. I think purely situational.
Yeah.
You know, we were living in an apartment that was not ours. It was actually my girlfriend at the time. It was her sister's apartment, but she wasn't living there. And, you know, we were living there, and then the lease came up. So we moved, we bounced around, we did the whole couch surfing thing. And, you know, we were living in Cobb County at the time, and the dope man was downtown. So it just kind of turned into, you know, we're staying at the dope man's house, staying at this friend's house that was closer.
Yeah.
And then I actually got in a car accident because we were living in our car at this time. So we got in a car accident. The car got totaled and I had a tent and I was like, screw it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just not going to leave. You know, I had picked up things that I could, you know, I could really had to hustle to make money because obviously I wasn't employable.
Yeah.
So like, you know, we had our hustles and we really didn't have to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Hustles
like what, like panhandling?
Yeah,
like...
yeah. I would fly a sign, you know, and it was pretty lucrative.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, you know.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, that's where I was. And actually somebody I went to high school with saw me flying a sign. And I didn't have a phone. They tried to get a hold of me. It wasn't until I got to treatment several months later I got on the internet for the first time in I don't know how long, and saw that they had saw me, and I was like, man, like,
what? Yeah,
like, kind of blew my mind because where I was at, I would never think that I would really see anybody I know unless they were down there doing like what I was doing to get high,
right.
You know,
right.
So, and they weren't, it was somebody that I hadn't spoken to probably since high school.
Hmm.
And they were like, hey man, you know, are you okay? I was like, well, I am now, you know. I'm glad they didn't stop because, you know, I couldn't tell you like the embarrassment, you know, like what that would feel like. But it was just all really just situational. It was just a choice I made to just be where everything was going on.
Yeah, your life is literally revolving around the dope.
Yeah. Absolutely. There was nothing else in my life that I, you know, had any interest in participating in. You know, my family, I can't say my family left me. I pretty much, you know, I left my family, you know, I was just couldn't, you know, it had gotten to the point to where I couldn't go around any of my family. You know, none of my friends were going to have me over at their house, you know, because I was probably going to steal something or, you know, they're, you know, it's just where it was.
Yeah. I remember I used to do a lot of speaking stuff down at the Atlanta Mission.
I'm real familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever
I've been there several times. Yeah. So I stayed a couple nights when I was in that part of town. And I got in an altercation with a guy, not there. It was down the street. And I was just like, I'm not going to hang out in this part of town anymore. I ended up heading more towards the other side of town.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember a guy in there was saying that he could do $300 a day.
Oh, yeah.
panhandling. It was funny how it came up too, because we were talking to him and he was saying something about his wife would come and get big. He was living under the bridge,
mm-hmm.
and his wife would come like once a month and get money from him. And we were like, "What do you mean get money from you? Like, you living under the bridge?" She's like, "Oh, I was making a lot of money." So he'd give her whatever it was, a grand or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then he'd go back under the bridge. It's a trip, man.
It was crazy. I was astonished at how much money people were making and I was making, you know. It was pretty wild.
We're not selling panhandling here, guys. You know, we're not pitching it. Although, hey, if times get rough, you know, if you need to pay the bills. But sometimes, if I'm really in the mood, when I stop, I'll say, "How's this spot working out for you?"
Yeah.
And then it's like, we can cut through all the bullshit and then we can have an honest conversation.
Yeah.
You know? And I used to take guys or people, like if I saw them, and I would help them out, you know, like mm-hmm. there's a hotel over here, they'll take cash. And I used to put people up a couple times, and then I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, I don't think I'm contributing positively to their life.
Yeah.
You know? So I just stopped really doing that. And then I guess from my involvement with the mission, understanding kind of the systemic like homeless issue. And so sometimes when you're giving money to a panhandler, you are kind of, you know, enabling them to continue instead of going to a place that's going to require them to come in sober. It's going to require them to take a shower and eat and do all these certain things. And if they want to stay, it's going to have all kinds of other requirements. And when sometimes that can help them stay out. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So today you woke up, do you like right now, as you're talking about this period of your life, right? In contrast to what you did today when you woke up. Tell me about what you did today when you woke up.
So first thing I did when I got up, I meditated for a little while. Definitely never did that when I was on the street. You know, it was, you know, if I had money at all, which was very seldom, I was trying to figure out how I was going to make money. That wasn't my first thought when I got up. When I got up this morning, I was like, you know, I'm pretty hungry right now. I'm going to go to my pantry and get something out of the pantry. I didn't have a pantry. You know, I had a bush over here with like a bag hanging on it that may or may not have some food in there. So, you know.
A pantry, you know, it's like.
Yeah. I never thought I would be.
How many bathrooms you got in your place?
Just two.
Just two.
Yeah. Just two. Having a bathroom.
Right.
Is so different, you know, like it's. Just being able to get up and take a shower when I want to.
Yeah.
You know, like, these are the things I think about, you know, like when we talk about, you know, getting complacent and like finding willingness, you know, all I really got to do is look back to, you know, what that was like and just think about that.
Right.
You know, I never thought I'd be living in a tent on Fulton Industrial, cause that's where I was living. And, it's like, I don't think anybody really aspires to go do that. They're not like, man, that's my goal. I'm going to go live on a tent on Fulton Industrial.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't my goal. But, you know, I just have to look back at that and think about, you know, what daily life was like, you know, when I was living down there. So.
And working with others is a great way to keep that in perspective, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just wrote a paper for seminary. In seminary, they had us read this book by Ram Dass called How Can I Help?
Yeah.
And have you read the book?
I have not, but I know what book you're talking about.
Yeah. And so I was writing about, you know, pontificating about all this. But, yeah, that 12th step, you know, having had a spiritual awakening, you know, and then the concept of helping another seems like it's altruistic. But in reality, it's like, it's a necessity for us to maintain our own spiritual condition.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because you have those conversations. You see someone who's at day five and you're having these conversations and you're like, it's mirroring back yourself, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of things that, especially, and I don't necessarily have to be working with somebody, but just being in a meeting and hearing people who are, you know, just starting out, you know, I'll hear things and I'll be like, man, like, you know, I start having flashbacks. Yeah. And I start thinking about things like that, you know?
Yeah. There's been some people, you know, that share their story and I'm like, damn, you were messed up.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I always hear people say, you know, some are sicker than others. You know, like I always tell people, you know, I'm definitely sicker than others, you know? And then I hear people and I'm like, man, I didn't go through what you went through. Damn, right. That's crazy.
So what I've realized from doing these kind of interviews and stuff, and also what's interesting is the longer that I've been in this, my past it seems to get clearer, I guess maybe more accurate.
Yeah.
And what I realize is like, I was a functioning addict. Like I liked to have the contrast of those two. I liked to perform and do something really good at, and then I liked to get high.
Yeah.
You know? And then the two would meld together, but I didn't like it to be too far in one direction. You know what I mean? So I was still, it's just as destructive, right? It just is.
Oh yeah.
It's an internal destruction. It's a more subtle destruction. And, even though I wasn't going to those extremes where I would lose, where I lost everything, who's to say I wouldn't at some point, right?
Right.
But that's kind of the delusion that kept me in it so long.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I thought I was handling everything, you know, and I think there's a lot of people who do that. They exist in active addiction, but they hold it down. Right, their jobs, or they pay their rents, and they think that, okay, this life isn't unmanageable, right? I can manage this,
right?
As long as I can get the drug,
right?
Get the substance. And so for me, it was like, if I couldn't get my drug of choice, and I couldn't get my second drug of choice, well, then I could just drink alcohol, right? So it was like, one way or another, I was going to escape or change the way I felt, you know? But I liked to have that balance, and that's still a semblance of control I was enacting on my life. You know, I knew that with the right concoction, I could perform on a certain different level if I took the right thing.
Right.
Right. I just didn't like that idea of I liked to be out of control in certain sections. Like, okay, here's the out of control time. And then, okay, now we're here, you know?
Yeah.
And, to me, like, I think that's why it's taken me so long to, I guess, come to some of the realizations that I've come to, you know, is because it really is me that's the problem. It's not the drugs.
Right.
It really is my distorted view. And I've been doing a lot of work in different fellowships now. So getting out of the substances and more into the, like, behavioral 12-step stuff.
Yeah.
And, that is the hardest shit I've ever done. Like, it's way easier to quit cocaine than it is to address, like, sex or codependency or even overeating, because these are things that somehow they still need to be in your life in some level, you know, depending on who you are or what you are or whatever. But that's been the most challenging. It's like, because now I'm really facing me. Really, there's the I look back, and maybe that's why I'm seeing such a better or more accurate view of my past, because I'm going, oh, yeah, I was the, like in the cruise, if I ran with the cruise, I was always the one to be like, oh, hey, let's go skiing tonight. What's up? Let's go. Let's do this. And I'd put it together, and I'd pay for it if I had to, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and it really, realizing that and owning that.
Yeah.
That it's, substance was delusional solution to my problem, which was me, right? Like that, I had this spiritual malady, right? Like it talks about, and drugs just, I guess, put the smoke screen up long enough.
Oh yeah.
That maybe I would the semblance of control or something. Yeah.
I definitely relate to that. You know, I was working with a sponsor. This was probably like, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago. And I was going back through the steps. And this time, when we were going back through the steps, it was more of a question of, who am I? Mm. What am I filling that hole with now that drugs and alcohol are no longer in the picture? Because if I'm being real, right, I'm not always going to put something spiritual in that hole.
Right.
What is it? Is it, you know, is it sex? Is it buying stuff I don't need? You know, yeah. It's a whole gamut of things that I used to stick in that hole. But it's awesome that you mentioned, you know, you see your past so much clearer. Because when I did that, I was really looking at, you know, what I had become now that drugs and alcohol are gone. But it also opened up, you know, a window into my past that I was looking at. And, you know, I noticed a lot of things that I didn't notice because I was so focused on, you know, my problem with drugs and alcohol. Yeah. And, you know, by the time I got sober this time, you know, I'm just like you had said, I realized, you know, drugs and alcohol are not my problem. I'm the problem. But I was so focused on not using drugs and alcohol as my coping mechanism anymore, mm-hmm. that's where all my attention was.
Yeah.
And now that my attention wasn't on that anymore, you know, I look back and, you know, a lot of things became much more clear. It was pretty eye-opening, you know?
Yeah. I was on a meeting recently and a guy that's got a significant amount of time, he was saying that, you know, the first time, this is how he was recommending it. He was like, the first time you get through the steps, like, just do them.
Yeah.
Right? Don't waste time. Get through each one. And then he's like, but if you've got some time under your belt now, then you should be taking your time with these steps. And that's what I'm doing at this point.
Yeah.
Right? Like doing my step four was like taking my time to really do that. And like really try to understand, like, well, I know what the routine answers are for what my resentments are. Right. And I could pull all the bullshit I pulled up the first 2-3 years when I was sober. Right. And it is, it's having good sponsorship to say, look, don't go digging up old bones just because you think that's the answer.
Yeah.
What's the resentment now today? And so even though the list wasn't as long, it was like deeper, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all close interpersonal relationships now. I'm not mad at the institutions anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Or at least I think after doing that 4-step, I kind of let that go, you know? But it's a, you know, depending on where you're at, I think that it is, it's that, I think that gift of desperation, I think it kind of keeps giving, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you been back down to where your tent was pitched?
I have not.
Never?
I've driven by it. What was I doing? I was doing something for work, or I was going somewhere, to pick up something, to do like some side job or something like that. And, I was cruising down Fulton Industrial and, you know, a lot of things have changed down there. A lot of things haven't changed.
Yeah.
But I definitely drove by the trail that I walk down every day. And it definitely gave me this real uneasy feeling. Like I started sweating.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, man, but it was in and out like that. I didn't reflect on it very long.
But
it is.
It's like a visceral reaction.
Oh, yeah.
They say something about like I don't know where I read this or heard this, but something like the cells in your body keep memory. You know, it's like how you can walk into a room and a certain smell will take you all the way back, you know. And for me, it was this hotel that was like, and when I would drive by it, because cocaine was my drug of choice. And so I would literally get bubble guts when I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
My body was like, and I'm like, we're not doing that. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
But it is. It's like my body has this memory. And I think it'll forever will. Like when I see it on in a movie, you know, depending on where I'm at, sometimes I'll see it and I'm like, eh. But most of the time, if I see someone blowing dope on a movie or something like that, there's a little bit of me that's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be awesome right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think I'll ever get rid of that. At least I hope I'll never be desensitized to that.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope not either. You know, like the movie thing, you know, sometimes I see it and I'm like, eh. Sometimes right. I see it and I'm like, dang, man.
Yeah.
Why can't I be normal? But right. Thankfully I'm not.
Why can't I be a normal heroin addict?
Yeah, right.
Just is there do such it on a Friday.
Thing? Yeah, you know.
Yeah, for real. It went away, like it was really bad in the first few years. You know, and another thing that really interests me about this whole, you know, sobriety and recovery thing is the physical side of it,
mm-hmm.
right? The physiological response, like the neuroplasticity of our brain. Like Joe Rogan recently had a neuroscientist on.
Yeah.
And I was watching, and Leslie's, my wife is like, what are you? I'm like, no, we should, when a scientist is talking,
yeah,
like we should pay attention because like, and the treatment center that I went to did a great job of combining all those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I remember the counselor going back as an alumni and the counselor was talking about that your brain rewiring and how different substances take different amounts of time for your brain to kind of fully rewire. And I remember distinctively him saying that, you know, cocaine was 5 years, to 5 years.
Yeah.
For your brain to like figure it out. And the issue with like your brain is sugar mimics the same neurological response as cocaine does. Sex mimics the same neurological response to sex as cocaine does. And then somebody said something that was, Adam said it on our podcast the other day. What did he say that mimicked the same thing? Was it resentment or there was something else that he said, another thing that that your brain fires off in the same way as if it was on the substance.
Right.
And so that's really interesting to me. I remember, if I'm remembering correctly, like opiates was a shorter time.
Yeah.
For your body to kind of equalize. But again, it's like we said, it's more of a spiritual condition than it is a physical, right?
Right.
But in taking into account all aspects. So like you're working the 12-step program. What other things do you put into your tool belt to maintain a semblance of happiness?
I think for me, I mean, it's any and anything, like any and absolutely everything.
Yeah.
If I think I can use it, I'm going to.
Yeah.
You know, I always hated on like self-help books.
Yeah.
But recently I've come in contact with a bunch of them.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I guess I'm going to read this thing. And I read it and it's, the parallels are like uncanny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of things that I've seen in recovery, you know, like,
right.
And, you know, so yeah, I mean, I use all kinds of stuff.
What's something like, is there a book you're reading right now that's outside of the step world of content or literature? Or what you read recently?
I'm reading a book right now called How to Love. Hmm. To be honest with you, I can't tell you the guy's name right now. I've never read his books. My dad reads a lot of his books. He's super famous. Mm-hmm. But I'm reading that book right now. And it's been pretty cool. You know, it's all about, you know, like loving yourself first before you can love someone else. But, you know, it kind of goes through both sides of like how to love yourself and then, you know, how to love, you know, another human being.
What's the book title?
How to Love.
You want to pull that up, Andrew?
Yeah.
He wanted to be Jamie and Joe Rogan. So he wanted me to, he's like, if you would tell me to pull something up, I'll be happy. So there it is. How to Love, the book.
We're looking it up right now. There's no camera on me either, so it's like perfect.
Yeah, you're just like the ominous voice in the background.
Right. Katie Contugno?
No. No.
Is that it?
No.
I'm not very good at
someone
this. You said it's famous. Called How to Love, right?
Yeah.
Mindfulness Essentials. That sounds about right.
It's a lot of silence.
Yeah.
Now I know.
I don't know how to pronounce.
Joe Rogan gets mad.
Nick Nat Han?
Yeah. That's
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't read any of his books, but tons of my friends are like, dude, you got to read this guy. Oh. My dad's like real big into philosophy. He's always like beating it over my head. And he's like, you got to read this. I can't believe you haven't read this. And this is like my first like dive into,
oh, man.
Like, you know, what he's all about and like that whole thing.
Thich Nhat Hanh has this book called Living Buddha, Living Christ. And in seminary, we studied Buddhism. And I was just... it's an Eastern philosophy.
Yeah.
And my mind is not that, or specifically at that time, right? My mind's way too binary. And I'm like, I don't understand it. And so my dean at the time, she recommended I read, to give me a framework to compare it to.
Yeah.
And he's a trip because in that book, he talks about taking the Eucharist or communion.
Yeah.
Right? And he calls Jesus Lord. Right. And then he talks about Buddha and it's this, what he calls it is interbeing,
mm-hmm.
this concept of everything being connected. Yeah. He's a great author. He's got like a ton of books.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. They have an app, a meditation app, Plum Village.
I've heard of it. Yeah. I don't use it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah. And he's got a lot of talks, on YouTube and he talks really slow and patiently. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, his stuff's pretty good. You know, I'm kind of disappointed I didn't read it sooner. Yeah.
What is the golden rule, right? Like the Christian version of it is, you know, love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And what I think, like, the concept is, like, if you can't love yourself very well, right, then how do you expect that you're going to be able to give that to somebody else?
Absolutely.
Right? And then, like, the... You know, 12 steps would say you can't give it away if you don't got it.
Right.
Right. You can't give away what we don't have. And I have it tattooed on my hand, to trust God, clean house, help others.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of that cleaning house portion, right?
Yeah.
It's learning to be self-accepting. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah. I'm definitely enjoying it. You said when you were talking about he has a lot of books, I got on Amazon and started looking through like what other books of his I could read. And I was like, I don't know if I can make a decision on this many books.
Yeah, I know. I like his writings. And I got into an author called Richard Rohr, and he's a Franciscan friar.
Mm-hmm.
So he's part of like the Catholic Church. But
yeah.
He wrote this book called Breathing Underwater about the 12 steps.
Why does that sound familiar to me?
It's a pretty popular, a lot of guys have read it.
Christian talks about it a lot.
Yeah, that's probably where I've heard it.
Yeah. And then, what's his name? The guy I just mentioned, How Can I Help? What's his author's name? I just spacing on his name.
I don't know. I'm terrible with names, dude.
I don't know.
So glad we're going to edit all this together. Although I always say that and then we don't, and then we just leave all this dead space in there.
We like to keep it authentic.
How Can I Help is Vinci, what's his name? He just passed away. But his stuff is really good too.
Xavier?
No. Xavier.
I don't know. You literally
I literally just said his name. And now it's escaping me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. Dude, that's crazy. Yeah, so pick up where we were. So as you're continuing through this journey of recovery, you begin to deepen it,
mm-hmm.
by looking at other things. So you call it self-help books, but it's about deepening your understanding of self.
Absolutely.
Of spirit, of others, of all those things, right?
Right.
I think that's necessary, you know. What's interesting is how you said, when I asked you, or I think earlier someone asked you about what drugs you used, mm-hmm. and you were like, anything and everything.
Yeah.
And then when I asked you, what do you do today to, you know, stay happy? And you were like, anything and everything.
Yeah.
It's the same concept, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whatever helps.
Yeah. You know, when I came in, you know, first thing I was asked was, what are you willing to do? And, you know, for so long it was like, I'll do this, but I won't do that.
Yeah.
Like Meatloaf said, you know, I just can't afford to think that way anymore.
Yeah. No.
You know, I want to move forward. I want to grow. You know, I like the feeling of growth, and I like seeing growth, even though, you know, it's hard to look at yourself and see growth. It really kind of takes an outside perspective. Someone that say, you know, man, you've really changed. But I like those things, you know. Yeah. I don't want to sit stagnant. You know, I have a lot of friends who are like, you know, they're totally like happy with that. You know, they'll just, you know, hang out at that spot, you know,
that
and
level.
If that works for them, then great. But, you know, I'm not going to remain happy that way. I know myself too well, you know, complacency, you know, I don't want to get comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's the days off that are the hard days,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I try to take Sundays off and not think, not architect, not build, not be creative, just,
yeah.
And, it's really hard to do. I'm not very good at it, you know?
Yeah.
So this Sunday I was able to a little bit, you know, and I was just tired and I was like, I'm going to watch. I binge watched, Warrior Nun. Nice. On Netflix.
Nice.
And you know, but it's so weird because there's that little character in my head that's like, what are you doing, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know, like, first off, you know, fuck you. I'm watching Netflix. Yeah. Like, let me freaking chill.
Yeah,
you know. And that's the thing that's interesting. I've yet to really find a hobby that really, you know, I like what we do here. And this is like fun. It's,
yeah.
Even though, like, as a nonprofit, you know, we raise money and so it sustains us and it keeps us going and we have clients and stuff, but it's been so much fun. It doesn't feel like we could be digging ditches, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It could be a lot worse.
Yeah.
And so I really do like that, but I have to be able to break away from that from time to time,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, the only thing I can even think of is like a jet ski, like on a lake, just jet ski wide open. Like, that's,
yeah.
It's like something has to be, death has to be, or something has to be at stake in order for me to enjoy myself.
Yeah.
Right?
I can understand that. Yeah. I can definitely understand that. I rode bikes for years and, you know, I gave that away to drugs and alcohol a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe that really that's the answer to your question of like, what do I use now to kind of like stay happy, you know, to keep the happiness going. And, I just kind of looked back at all the things that I liked doing, I guess I should say like late high school years.
Yeah.
You know, because at one point in high school, you know, I think I just kind of like stopped any kind of hobbies that I had and put all my attention into working and drugs and alcohol, you know?
Yeah.
So I just kind of looked back at those things. You know, I played instruments when I was young. So like music has always been a big part of my life. But I started riding bikes again and man, I'm having a
blast.
Bikes? Yeah. Like mountain bikes, like Big Creek's just down the street here. Like literally around the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that place is awesome.
Yeah.
Me and my buddies ride there a lot.
Sorry, I'm burping.
It's all good. but you know, art.
There's something really freeing about working with your hands, right?
Like, I love it. I've tried to like do the office thing and it just sitting in one place all day. I mean, it has its benefits, but for me, you know, it's not that great. I just like, you know, I work with a lot of sheet metal, you know, yeah. just being able to look at something and be like, man, I built that from start to finish, you know, it's pretty gratifying.
And it's done.
Yeah. And it's done.
Right. That's the thing with creative work. It's never really done.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, I heard someone say that creative work is never done. It's abandoned.
Yeah.
You just get it to a point where you can live with it and then you move on, you know?
Yeah.
Or where the client can live with it. Yeah. So to wrap up, like, you know, if you have anything that kind of you want to say for somebody, you know, like when you think of the addict who's suffering, what stage in recovery do you think of that person in? Early, you know, kind of with some time or?
Man, it could be anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I see people with years suffering.
Yeah.
You know, just all depends on where you're, I mean, where you're at personally.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're struggling with, like, you know, really staying sober like I did, you know, and you're, if you're one of those people that, you know, practice the revolving door policy, mm-hmm. you know, or you don't even have to be that person, you know. I don't know. Yeah. You could be struggling anywhere, but, I think that, you know, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And I know I hear people say that all the time, but like, this is the analogy that I always go back to
mm-hmm.
is, you know, for me, if I go out and use today, right. Probably not going to lose my job. I'm probably not going to go to jail. I mean, I could, I might, but you know, I probably won't. I'm not going to be broke, but it's a 50-50 shot that I'll lose my life. And you know, I know that that's a dark and dismal way to look at things. But I always tell people, you know, like to really try and use that to your advantage, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't use.
Yeah.
Just don't use.
Well, especially with opiates, right? And,
yeah.
And shooting.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it don't even have to be opiates anymore.
No, I mean, they're lacing, you know, like cocaine with fentanyl.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. It's crazy. And I don't know. It's just... I didn't give myself a shot for so long, you know, and I'm so happy that I did. And, you know, I want that for anybody else too, you know, and I know that it's difficult. I mean, it really is, especially if you're coming into recovery and you have no clue what the 12 steps are. You look up on the wall and you see like the steps in the traditions. You're like, dude, is this a, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, like, and you know, like I go to this clubhouse and, you know, they have the traditions or the steps and the traditions, and then they have the spiritual principles on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I can tell you that I've learned is that if I was to go out and ask somebody on the street, tell me what happiness is, they're probably going to give me the Webster's Dictionary version.
Hmm.
They're not going to tell me what happiness feels like.
Hmm.
I can tell you what happiness feels like. I can tell you what guilt, shame, and remorse actually feels like, you know, and I can show you brotherly love. I mean, I could go down the whole list, you know? If I was to say to somebody, just, you know, give yourself a chance.
Yeah. I really like that idea. Giving yourself a chance, because that's part of it, is we don't think we're worth it, you know? And all, everybody I know that's, you know, in recovery, even the ones that are dicks, it's still worth it. You know, they're still going to make me laugh, or they're still, it's such a better way of life.
And, absolutely. And there's people to reach out to. I mean, like, I think that was a big part of getting sober for me, was not reaching out to the people that I was so used to reaching out to.
Yeah.
You know, people that, and when I say that, you know, like, I got sober with a guy that I grew up with, and I'm talking about fifth grade grew up. We went through homelessness together. We went through endless jobs together, and we actually went to the same treatment center together. You know, there are friends that you get that are probably real friends, but, you know, most of those people are not real friends.
Yeah.
But I encourage people to, like, reach out.
Yeah.
Reach out to somebody, like, if you're struggling with something, mental health, substance abuse, whatever it is.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool.